So I was 6 years old and in kindergarten. And, you know, life was pretty good as it can be for a six-year-old. I had a mom, a dad, a sister, and a brother. And for the most part, I felt like I came from a normal, caring, loving family. I remember my mom. She was the hardest working woman around. I remember she would come home from her day job, and she wouldn't even have an hour to herself before she was slipping on her waitress uniform to go to her second job. You know, my dad, you know, he was also a really hardworking man. He was a blue-collar guy, a bricklayer. So like I said, for the most part, I felt like I came from a normal family. Now, I don't confuse normal with perfect, because I have to tell you, there was a lot of struggle, a lot. I definitely remember the times when the lights were out, or the phone was disconnected, or there was no heat, or the food that was on our table had come from some Good Samaritan somewhere. But in my head, you know, I was warm, I was safe, I had clothes on my back, food to eat, and every night I had a place to go home to, at least in my six-year-old head. So in the spring of 1981, the facade of warmth and safety came crashing down around me. I had gone to school like any other day, and I had just finished up a morning kindergarten session of housekeeping or block building or drawing or whatever it was you did in kindergarten. And I got called down to the principal's office, and they told me that my vice principal was going to be giving me a ride home. And I thought that was kind of strange, because that was definitely not the normal thing that I did, but I went with it, and he took me home. And I remember we got to Featherbed Lane, where my apartment complex was, and we came around the bend, and I remember getting sort of hit in the head with this crazy, chaotic scene in front of my apartment building. It looked like somebody's house. Somebody's books and toys and clothes and sofas and chairs were sitting out on the curbside. So I stretched my little frame up in the car so I could get a better look out of the car window. And all of a sudden, I noticed this blue and white tennis shoe that was kind of sitting there by itself. Then it looked an awful lot like my brother's. And then I noticed this bowling ball case that I could have sworn was my dad's. And then I saw it. I saw my favorite black pleather swivel chairs that my brother, sister, and I used to sit around at the dining room table and spin around in every night after dinner, just laying there, toppled on its side. And so then it hit me. This was my family out on the curbside. This was my family's living room, sitting there, naked and exposed in broad daylight in front of the entire neighborhood to see. So I remember getting out of the car, and I was on the edge of panic, you know, kind of frozen, and just as I was about to fall off that edge, in swooped my mother, my hero. And she picked me up, and she hugged me tight, and she transferred every bit of energy she had left in her entire body. And she whispered in my ear, "We're moving today." Oh, okay. Well, that made sense. That's why our stuff is out on the curb. We're moving today. You see, I didn't know what homelessness was, and eviction was not a part of my six-year-old vocabulary. So when she said that, I just thought my family was moving on to a new adventure. But what I didn't know is that the night before, she had walked up to the 7-Eleven in the pouring rain to use the payphone to try and get our rent so we wouldn't be thrown out while my father slept beside our disconnected phone. What I had no idea about is that we were always at least one paycheck away from this happening to our family. And what I really didn't know is that I was about to enter the longest period of uncertainty in my young life. So move we did, but there was no new house waiting for us. Instead, what was waiting for us was a month-long period of alternating floors between my aunt's plush, soft, carpeted floors in her adult-only apartment complex in Woodlawn and my grandmother's very, very hardwood floors over on Poplar Grove Street. But, you know, I have to tell you, and I don't think I'm repressing any childhood feelings, I really didn't feel like I was homeless. Because, yeah, we were homeless. I mean, every night we'd lay our beds and every morning we'd pick them up, but right beside me, on those blankets were my brother, my sister, and my mother. And so, you know, the people around me, you know, what was normally a desperate situation, they somehow made a home for me and created this normalcy. So, you know, we went to school every day like normal. We had clothes on our back, food to eat, none of the kids knew, no one teased us. And somehow we managed not to be erased by the power of poverty that just destroys so many families. But there was one thing that was really missing, and that was my dad. You see, he had not moved with us. He was somewhere out there, caught in this web of failure and guilt and trying to figure out how he was going to put a roof over his family's head again. You see, something I have to tell you about my dad. he grew up an orphan. When he was 5 years old, his dad died. When he was six, not even a year later, his mother died, leaving 13 children to be raised by the nuns in an orphanage called St. Elizabeth's over on the east side of Baltimore. So, you know, this was never a man who, even as a boy, he never had a sense of home and security and stability, and he certainly couldn't provide it for his own family, and somehow his paychecks just never made it back to our dinner table. But, you know, I was six. That didn't matter to me. I loved my dad, my brother and sister. We missed him. And so every night my mom would come home from her second job. She kept her second job through all this craziness. And she would come home to our incessant pleading of, where's dad? We miss dad. We want to live with dad again. And so what we didn't know was that she was exhausted. You know, she didn't want to expose us to this anymore. But at the same time, she didn't want to break up her family. And she definitely didn't want to deprive her children of their father. So she gave in to us and probably made a decision against her better judgment. And she took my dad back. And so in about a month's time, we were reunited, and we moved into a new apartment over in a place called GR Drive in Woodlawn. And so life went on, and in the next 12 years, my family moved four more times. And everywhere we went, struggle followed us. And eventually, my mom grew really tired. You see, the shelter that she had essentially provided for us was sheltering us from the financial realities that was our family. And so she made a really difficult decision, and eventually our home was broken into two. So it wasn't easy, but, you know, as an adult, looking back, I feel like when you grow up as a child like that, moving around, you either become one of two grown-ups. You become that grown-up who is an addict for stability. You have to be grounded, you have to live in one place, and you're going to make that happen at all cost. Or you become this adult who doesn't feel comfortable without movement, and you just adopt this nomadic lifestyle. So I will share with you all that since I was born to the time that I was 18, my family moved nine times. Since I was 18 and left for college, I have lived in six different countries. I've had about 20 apartments, moved about 25 times, had about 15 roommates, and traveled to almost 50 countries. So you can probably tell what kind of adult I became. But last year, I took a stand and I said, I am not going to move anymore. I'm going to find my home. I'm tired of this instability. So I moved to New York. I get this great apartment in Brooklyn. And I had no sooner signed the lease, blinked my eyes, found my local grocery store when my job called me and said, you'll be moving to Nigeria for 3 months. So, you know, did I feel unraveled that I was going to be uprooted once again? Yeah, I did. But did I pack my bags and go? Absolutely. Thank you.